storm, hold your head up high, and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm is a golden sky, and the sweet silver song of a lark.
Hello. This is a special from Sun Sounds of Arizona, and our guest today is Amy Zellmer, author of Life with a Traumatic Brain Injury, Finding the Road Back to Normal, originally published on the Huffington Post. Amy's book was inspired by her own experience and the realization that not enough information, understanding, and help were available for the TBI community. We find out about her journey and discoveries traveling that long, sometimes painful, sometimes joyous journey. Welcome, Amy Zellmer.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, we're just delighted. Let's find out how and when this happened to you. The day your life changed, a hard fall on a patch of ice. And you tell us about that.
Yeah, so I am from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and we get ice there in the winter. And it was February of 2014. I actually was carrying my Yorkie. I have a 7-pound Yorkie. She had refused to walk, and so I picked her up. She probably knew better than I did. So I picked her up and was carrying her down our driveway, which has a bit of an incline. And I had zero warning. I didn't know that there was ice, and my foot hit it, and my feet, I imagine it looked like a cartoon. My feet kind of went up in the air, and I landed full impact on the back of my head.
Ooh.
Yeah. And we figure I was probably unconscious about a minute or two, because when I got up, Pixie had walked probably 10, 15 feet away from me, and she was just kind of staring at me, not sure what was going on, so...
What a terrible fall. Who found you then? What did you do after that?
Well, I found myself. I sat up. I didn't think I had blacked out, but because of where Pixie was, we're pretty sure I had blacked out for at least a minute or two. I knew right away when I got up I wasn't okay. I had excruciating pain on the back of my head. I actually expected to see blood, but there was no blood. And my vision was disturbed. I was seeing stars. I couldn't quite see right. So I got Pixie and got us back in the house. No one was around, so no one saw it except Pixie. She's not talking.
I don't even know how you managed to do that. When you got into the house, then what did you do from there?
The first thing I did is I went and changed out of my pajamas, because I still have my pajamas on. And I was worried I was going to have to call an ambulance, so I didn't want to be in my pajamas.
You know what our mothers always told us, right?
Exactly. That's exactly what went through my head. And, in hindsight, it's really kind of funny that was the first thing I thought of. But then I called my neighbor and asked her to come over. I'm like, I think I might need you to take me to the emergency room. And so she came over and she asked me who the president was, and I thought it was Bill Clinton. And she asked me what I had for dinner the night before, and I was like, I don't know. Like, I could tell I was really dazed. Like, I just knew I wasn't okay. And she gave me an ice pack to put on my the back of my head, and she's like, I think you're fine. I don't think you need to go to the emergency room. And she went home. So I actually...
Thank you, Dr. Neighbor. Yes.
Yes. So I actually, one of my good friends called and was like, you need to go see Dr. Fred right now. He's a chiropractic neurologist. He specializes in concussions and sports injuries. So I drove myself against my better judgment, and I went to see him right away. About an hour after I fell, I was in his office.
All right. Well, as an overview, traumatic brain injury, according to statistics, contributes to 30% of all injury-related deaths. So you were pretty lucky in a way. And the effects can last from a few days, which to the rest of one's life. Could you tell our audience what these effects could be, including on the family?
Yeah. So for me, I had a lot of dizzy and balance issues. I had short-term memory problems. I had aphasia, which is where you can't recall a word, or you might just say the completely wrong word. You know, it disrupts your life. There's a lot of fatigue. I was sleeping 14, 15 hours at night.
Oh, my goodness.
Plus a nap in the middle of the day. And I live alone, so I didn't have anyone really to help me. But, you know, it takes a toll on everyone. And, you know, if you have a caregiver or a parent or you live with a spouse, you know, it affects everybody. It's not just the person who's injured, 'cause it changes you.
Well, people don't seem to have as much patience in general. I've noticed that because I've worked with learning disabled kids. How did you feel about people in general? Did most of them help you? I noticed in your book you mentioned that there were things not to say to a person with TBI.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people I thought would be there, they really just drifted away. You know, they said things. One person actually said to me, at least you don't have cancer.
Why do people think those remarks are helpful?
I don't even know. I think it's just simply they don't know what to say or do. And it's really frustrating. People that you think would be there to support you. I remember calling a friend asking if they would be interested in going out to dinner because I didn't know how to use my microwave or my oven.
Oh, my goodness.
I couldn't comprehend the buttons. And so I called and asked them if they would take me out to dinner. And they're just too busy. And, I mean, I can see on one hand where they maybe really were too busy. I called several people. But I think some of it was just simply, like, an excuse. And I still can't wrap my head around it, like, if they thought I was faking it or... I just don't quite know what it was that caused people to drift away so quickly.
I think maybe they don't have that insight or, you know, we like to think that most people are good, and I still think they are, but there are people who just cannot rise to the occasion. But in the meantime, I'm sure it was very hurtful for you.
Yeah, yeah. You know, even just a simple email or a card in the mail just saying I'm thinking of you, that would have gone a long way.
Or some super cookies.
Yes. Yes, because I couldn't cook.
Well, of course. And I noticed that in one of your chapters where you said what not to say to a person with TBI, one of the things was, how are you feeling? Mm-hmm. Is that just too general a question, or you want to say, how the heck do you think I'm feeling?
Exactly. Yeah, you know, it's like, we feel like crap, and you don't want to hear that, so don't ask us that. You know, like, you don't want to know the real answer.
Yeah, I didn't think of that angle.
Yeah.
So maybe it would be more, what could I do for you?
Yes.
You know, cookies, soup, as I said, anything like that. It's just really, really sad that people don't know how to help. And I noticed you also said something about people thought they were funny. Somebody made a remark about, don't wear stilettos. Can
yes.
you expand on that?
Yeah. You know, one friend called me and was like, so you shouldn't be wearing stilettos on the ice. And I'm like, I wasn't wearing stilettos. I was wearing boots. Like, and then another person, we have Red Bull crashed ice in St. Paul. And she's like, were you attempting crashed ice? And it's like, I feel like crap. I don't know, up from down right now, like humor. And I think some people do enjoy humor, and it just, and I've heard this from other TBI survivors, we can't process it. We don't know they're trying to be funny. Everything comes across as literal to us.
Oh, now that interests me very much.
Yeah.
I didn't think of that. It's almost like someone who's somewhere on the autism scale.
Yes, exactly. It's very similar. It parallels a lot of autism. Yeah, not the inability. I think it's because our brains it needs so much energy just to heal that there's no energy left over for some of those processing skills. You know, like understanding, are you being serious? Is this satire? I took everything very, very literally for a very long time.
This is, I think this is helpful for anybody to know who wants to help because it seems to me it would just make you feel more pain emotionally, and more anxiety.
Yeah.
And I noticed, speaking of anxiety, you also said in your book, or wrote in your book, not to say stop worrying.
Right.
And you had something about a quote, which I loved. Would you tell someone in a wheelchair to get up and walk or stop using the wheelchair? So why would you tell an anxious person to stop being anxious?
Yeah.
What would the right thing, or close to the right thing, be to say to somebody? Just accept it? Or what would the right thing
There's
be
really
to say?
There's really nothing to say. I mean, if you've experienced anxiety yourself, that's a good thing to share. I had a friend share that with me. She was like, yeah, I totally get what you're going through. I've experienced anxiety. It sucks. You know, just to have that reassurance that I'm not the only one that's dealt with it. But yeah, telling people, stop worrying. It's no big deal. You know, like things like that. It's just, it's so not helpful because to me, it's the biggest thing in the world right now, trying to get better. And you're telling me it's no big deal. So
yeah, and you don't know. It's best not to say anything. Or how do you feel if somebody just sort of puts their arm around you or gives you a hug or pat? You know, is that demeaning, or do you think it's genuine? How would that help if there was some kind of physical, you know, where someone just said, I'm sorry, and put their arm around you, or what can I do to help?
Yeah, I mean, the what can I do to help, that's a hard question because we don't know what we need.
Didn't think of that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we're so just not in our right mind, especially shortly after it happens. And the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that, I mean, I'm over 2 years out from my accident, and I still struggle with things. And there's people who struggle heavily for 4, 5, 6 years or the rest of their life. So it's not just a short-term problem. You know, so asking how can I help, what do you need, I might not know what I need. And so that's, I kind of wrote about that in one chapter about, you know, just bring over a meal, bring over cookies. Bring me a movie to watch. Maybe, you know, maybe come over and hang out with me. Or, you know, it's because it's really hard to leave the house. I didn't think of that.
It's hard to leave the house.
There's a lot of overstimulation. You know, like going to Applebee's for dinner is a challenge because there's TVs on different stations. There's, you know, the flickering lights from the TVs. There's music playing, people talking. It's just too much.
It's too much, like overload.
Sensory overload. Yes, exactly.
And I think there actually is something psychologically or psychiatrically that has to do with sensory integration or sensory overload. So you're getting some of that because of the jolt to your brain.
Mm-hmm.
That it's too much. What if someone just said, look, what if someone were more specific, such as, let me drive you to get groceries, or give me a list and I'll get some groceries, or I'll come over and see if you need milk or eggs.
Just, you know, the last part you said, like, let me look and see what you need in your fridge. Because I can't even relate to you how challenging some of this stuff is for us. Just simply going to the grocery store. The grocery store is one of the most overwhelming places to go. Like, and if you forgot your list at home, forget it. You won't remember what you came for.
You said somewhere in your book that you are queen of the sticky notes.
Yes.
So that's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to come back to that, but in the meantime, in chapter 14, I keep mentioning these chapters, so you know I really did read your book twice and then skim it. What is a healing box? What are the contents, such as the earplugs? What is a healing box?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a friend in Wales, in the United Kingdom, and she created a company called Healing Boxes. And over in the UK, they have like a nonprofit. It's called a SICK. And so all of the proceeds go back to the community and help the community. And she asked if I would team up and make a TBI-specific healing box. And the point of these boxes is you can send it to someone in the hospital or maybe someone who just got home from the hospital. So my TBI box has an ice pack. It has an eye mask to block out the light. It has earplugs. It has a soothing meditation CD. It has a little thing of tea to make a cup of tea.
Perfect.
Yeah. So it's very specific to things that you might want especially when you're first recovering.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to know. I didn't understand. How do you know who needs them and to whom do you send them? How do you know who needs these healing boxes?
Well, you could send one to yourself if you had a TBI. Mm-hmm. You could send one, you know, like my friends who didn't know what to do. They could have sent me one.
I see. So they could have done that. Is that somewhere?
It's like sending flowers, except you're sending something very specific
very
to
useful.
What they need.
Mm-hmm. Is there a website for that, for those healing boxes?
Yep. It's healing-boxes.com/TBI.
Healing-boxes.com/TBI.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Now, in chapter 3, and you this is what we wanted to get back to. In chapter 3, you mentioned that you and others with TBI often feel isolated and alone, and we talked about that briefly, and also in terms of the sensory overload, which you just mentioned. Can you give us any more examples? Too many lights, loud TV? If you were going out to a club or going out to dinner, can you stay at that table? Do you just avoid going out? How do you handle
that? A lot of times I avoid going out. There were numerous times when I'd be out and it was just too much and we'd pack up our food and leave. I attempted to go to a friend's going away party and it was at like a restaurant bar type place. Mm-hmm. Same thing, you know, different TVs, music playing really loud, people talking. And I finally just had to excuse myself and go home. You know, it's challenging. And the other thing, like you could even just be at home, but like, say five of your friends come over at once and everybody's talking, it's really, really hard. You know, keep in mind, our brains are processing so much slower. You know, like think about your computer and if it has a virus or something and it's processing super, super, super slow, that's what our brains are doing. So when person number one is telling you a sentence, person number two starts talking, I'm still trying to figure out what person number one said. And so it's completely draining to try and keep up with too many people talking and people talking too fast. And I would tell people, can you repeat that? Can you please say that slower? I'm not quite understanding what you're saying. And it's really, really hard for someone who's never experienced TBI to understand. Like, I totally get that. They think that we're just not paying attention, and that's not at all the case. It's like we're trying twice as hard to pay attention.
People just are not patient. There's a Brain Injury Awareness Day, and that was in March in Washington, D.C., and you were instrumental in this accomplishment. Can you give us the history behind this? I know in Chapter 6 you noted that your story, Life with a Traumatic Brain Injury, was published on the Huffington Post. Tell us how that got you into the Brain Injury Awareness Day and the GoFundMe crowd. And then you had Senator Al Franken from your home state of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. So at my one-year mark, on my one-year anniversary was when I wrote my first piece. And a friend suggested I submit it to Huffington Post. And I was a little skeptical and like, why would they want it? But I went ahead and submitted it, and within a couple hours, I heard back saying, yes, we'd love to feature this. So I had to do a little bit of editing to it, but it went live about 2 weeks later, and it just went crazy viral. Like, I was thinking one or two people would read it.
Really?
Yeah. It had like 2,800 shares and it had like 15,000 likes on it within like 2 days.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and it sat on the front page of Huffington Post's website for 2 days, which is kind of long in, you know, media. You know,
sure,
must have been a slow news day type of thing. And so I formed a Facebook group called the TBI Tribe. It's a private group for survivors, caregivers. They can join. And, you know, I started out right away with about 300 members. And then I was invited to go out to D.C. for Brain Injury Awareness Day in March. And it was only literally like 10 days away. And I was like, I don't have the money. There's no way I can make this work. And she's like, well, try doing a GoFundMe. I'm like, okay, I'll give it a whirl. And so within just a couple days, I raised about $1,200 to cover my airfare and hotel to go out to Washington, D.C.
Well, that shows that people did care. That's the good part. So off you went. And you also talked about the value of yoga. And we have time to hear about that. Why is that helpful physically and emotionally? I know yoga probably has something to do with balance.
So about 15, 16 months after my fall. So I had also dislocated my sternum and I had whiplash in my fall. So I had some physical limitations as well as the brain injury symptoms, which, like you just said, balance and dizziness, those were fairly prominent for me the whole time. And so I actually had been doing yoga since college. And I knew that yoga would help me, but I was really afraid of hurting myself further because,
of course,
you know, there's just so many poses I couldn't do. And so I had one of my instructors come over, and she helped me come up with about 5 poses that I could do. Some of them I had to hold on to a chair so that I could have my balance. Mm-hmm. And I did them for about 15 minutes every day. And gradually that dizziness and balance got better and my range of motion, you know, grew. And now I'm able to do poses that I couldn't even do before. So
terrific.
Yeah. You know, I had one doctor told me I basically developed my own vestibular therapy on my own. And, you know, just getting that blood flowing, getting oxygen to the brain, the mind-body connection, just becoming real aware of your body and the breath, you know, all of that really plays a factor in recovery.
Now, that's very helpful, very productive. That's something I wouldn't have thought of. Maybe somebody in our audience would, but I certainly would not have. I also want to touch briefly in Chapter 12. Again, I'm letting you know I read your book, right? The Miss America contestant. I think I saw that last year.
Yeah.
Miss Oregon in 2015. She has TBI.
Yes, Allie Wallace. And mm-hmm. she just passed down her crown just this last week to the new Miss Oregon. For the Miss America pageant, her platform was traumatic brain injury. And I just thought that was really fantastic. She had an accident practicing dance or cheerleading moves and landed on her head, kind of like I did. And she struggled for quite some time with it. So,
and according to what you had written, not everyone recognized how bad it was right away.
Yes. No, not even the doctors. And that's not uncommon.
Oh, my goodness. All right. I do want to ask you if you are working on another book.
I am. I haven't started it, but I've got all the ideas stirring around in my head. I want to interview other survivors and caregivers and just really kind of craft their stories in a way that's very helpful for survivors. You know, for instance, I might talk to Bob, and Bob has a lot of dizzy issues. And so in the back of the book, you could look up dizzy, and it would specify which chapters to go read to learn more about dizzy.
You have an index. That's a great idea. That's true. I can't imagine how you were putting this all together and sequencing.
I have a great editor.
Okay.
My editor really is who helped make this book a book, because, you know, it was a compilation of short stories off HuffPost, and she really did a great job of helping me turn it into a book. So, I could have never done it without her.
Well, that's good. Very good of you to give her that recognition. And I think it also proves that if you have some understanding and patience from others, then everything is productive. Otherwise, the lack of understanding and impatience is counterproductive. And I'm glad you talked about the caregivers a little. Can you tell us a little more about caregivers? I think you said earlier in pre-production you thought that they were overlooked a bit.
Yeah, you know, the caregivers, it can be exhausting no matter what you're caregiving for. I mean, there's more caregivers than just TBI. But they need to really remember to take care of themselves, to take breaks, to get involved in caregiver support groups. And you know, there's resources out there for them as well to help understand what their loved one is going through. Because it can be really frustrating. You know, people think, oh, you're just malingering. And no, I'm really still dealing with these issues. So
everyone's a doctor and a therapist, except they don't have those credentials.
You got it.
Well, Amy, I want to mention to our audience that you're also a creative business coach and a professional photographer before we close our program. I just had a glimpse of how you might feel because I left out this information, even though it's sitting right there in front of me. It's supposed to be earlier. And I know that you're on your way to speak to a support group at St. Joseph's. Mm-hmm. So I just want to thank you, and I want to tell our audience that Amy emphasizes the idea of a tribe or village helping those with traumatic brain injury. Even now, the CDC, or Center for Disease Control and Prevention, plans to create a system to track concussion rates and trends in children and adults. Just saw this in the good old Arizona Republic yesterday. So this is important. Amy and her tribe, however, have created a system that is a well-lit, steady road to travel for survivors of TBI. Thank you, Amy, for your devotion, your commitment, your practical advice, and for being with us here at Sun Sounds of Arizona.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to continue to raise awareness.
We're delighted. Thank you to Ashley Mafuccio for so beautifully and tenderly performing You'll Never Walk Alone from the famous musical Carousel. Ashley's sister Brittany is a brain injury survivor.
Walk on through the wind.